While we're all waiting, how many of you have been to a city council meeting before? Okay. So just, and how many of you have signed up to testify or want to testify? Okay. So if here our rules are, if you're a lobbyist, then you have to declare who you're lobbying for. And then if you need to sign up with Carla there to testify outside, sign-up sheet is still outside, and then we'll call you up based on the sign-up sheet, and you'll have 3 minutes. You do not have to, and we do not recommend that you give us your address. So don't give us your address. Just give us your first and last name, and then the clock's on the other side of that box there, and it'll be the countdown clock. And other than that, it's pretty straightforward. How are you? Good. Are you going to Impact tonight?
Yeah.
Yep. I haven't had time to look. Have you? Yeah. I don't think it's anything definitive. I'm going to keep quiet so I can be obnoxious at the next meeting. Yeah, I think the one after this is getting more into the substances.
Let me know when you want to do the comeback.
You can talk all you want. You can talk all you want next time too, but I'm going to be quiet this time.
Did I tell you about the things yesterday?
Yep.
So,
we can't go without the council sponsor.
I see Serena Austin from the Senator McCoy staff.
Where? Oh, yeah. Mr. Schaff, is your commissioner around?
I sure hope so.
Okay. Are your remarks as extensive as this morning's? Which
probably
were really good. Okay, well, we'll settle in then. Your remarks this morning were really good. So, could you go? Carla? Yeah, okay. Thank you, Carla. Oops. City Council reconvened from its recess. We are about to consider Council Item 320, which is a time certain, 2:30, Wednesday, March 25th. Carla, will you please read the title?
Item 320, accept the recommendations in the report on the long-term 2 enhanced surface water treatment rule compliance plan.
Commissioner Leonard.
David Schaff is going to make a presentation. David?
Schaff, and I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. I'm here to present a report to you on the status of the Water Bureau's compliance efforts in regard to a new drinking water regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act called the Long-Term 2 Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule, a mouthful, which we all refer to as LT2. Compliance with the rule would have impacts on two separate parts of Portland's water system. First, the rule requires the city to provide additional treatment to its Bull Run supply to either remove or inactivate cryptosporidium. The treatment options available to the city for this include filtration, either traditional or a newer micro-membrane technology to remove the parasites, ozonation, which is the introduction of ozone to the water to destroy the crypto-oocysts, chlorine dioxide, which is a chemical disinfectant, or ultraviolet radiation. UV lights irradiate the cryptosporidium oocyst to prevent them from reproducing. It's commonly referred to as inactivation. The rule requires that additional treatment be in operation by April 1, 2014, assuming a two-year extension that's allowed under the rule. I think you will remember that a couple of weeks ago I had a clock with me. It was the countdown clock. It is now down to 1,832 days. It's approximately 5 years and a little less than a week for us to build a treatment plant under the rule if we are not successful in our strategy with Congress. Second, the rule requires that water systems that store treated water in an open reservoir, in other words, they use uncovered finished water storage facilities, like those at Mount Tabor and Washington Park, either cover the reservoirs or provide treatment at the outlets of the reservoirs to inactivate Cryptosporidium, Giardia, and other viruses. The rule requires that Portland must have an approved schedule for complying with the rule by April 1st of this year, so just a few days from now. Portland's primary source water, the Bull Run, is a pristine watershed far removed from the types of human activities and pollution that are associated with the presence of Cryptosporidium. There's no human sewage or cattle exposure to Portland's source water and the federally protected Bull Run watershed. The wildlife that inhabits the Bull Run watershed poses the only potential source of Cryptosporidium in the Bull Run. Because of this, the city rarely detects crypto in the Bull Run when it conducts regular water quality monitoring, and then only at extremely low levels. The city samples Bull Run water for crypto on a monthly basis, and it has not been detected in Portland's drinking water samples since September of 2002. Today's report. I'm here today to outline the two options that the Water Bureau is recommending the Council follow in order to achieve compliance with the new rule. Please note that I said compliance. In a recent letter from the Friends of the Reservoir organization, Floyd Jones urged Portlanders to tell the Council, quote, none of these projects should be approved unless and until we do not achieve legislative relief, close quotes, and asked that they remind you that, quote, it would take 75 to 100 years of noncompliance penalty fees before reaching the eventual total cost of these projects, assuming the EPA decided to actually do so. Maximum assessment for violating an administrative order is $37,500 per day, or about $13.5 million per year, close quotes. Refusing to comply with federal law and incurring fines of $37,000 a day for noncompliance, no matter how much the City Council disagrees with the law, is simply not a viable option or approach. The potential fine ranges from a dollar to a maximum of $37,500. It could be a daily fine. However, the EPA is likely to consider each of the five reservoirs a separate violation. The potential daily fine is actually $187,500. The potential annual fine is $68.4 million. For perspective, that's almost my entire annual operating budget of $69 million. In a letter dated February 11th to the Bureau, the EPA stated, quote, EPA can only approve a construction schedule under which Portland takes immediate steps toward compliance with the open reservoir components of LT2. The schedule needs to show that you will work steadily and consistently toward compliance, close quotes. EPA would not just seek penalties. First, the city would be required to send, could be required, and probably would be required, to send regular notices to all of our customers saying we were out of compliance with federal law and advising of the potential health risks. Second, EPA would seek injunctive relief demanding compliance, and the court could and probably would grant that injunctive relief. If the city refused to comply with a court injunction, a U.S. district court would have power to take charge of the Water Bureau, a sort of judicial receivership. They would assess rates and run the Bureau to force compliance. Courts don't like to do that, of course, and I've never worked for the feds, and I'm really not sure I want to start this way. Once the city's out of compliance, and that could be as early as next week if we don't get the approval of our plan by the EPA, we will have violated our wholesale agreements. Customers will be in the position to stop buying if they have alternative sources, or demand a substantial drop in the price of water because it's no longer what they contracted for, in other words, legal water. That would be a major hit to the Water Bureau. 20% of our revenue comes from our wholesale contracts. I noticed sitting here that a number of our wholesale customers are in the audience. They're very interested in how we approach compliance with LT2. I haven't mentioned the state sanctions yet. They include potential loss of our certification to operate a public water system, in addition to fines and possible imprisonment in the county jail not exceeding 6 months. Each day that the violation continues is a separate offense. Now, I'm hoping that since I'm recommending that we either change the law or comply with it, that I'm not the one that's going to be serving the jail time. However, you can be sure that none of the people today urging you not to comply will be serving that jail time either. So it's presumably either me or one of you. The history of the regulation, how have we gotten here? I've outlined a brief history to the rule and our efforts to fight it. First, what is crypto? It's a microorganism, a protozoa, that's naturally present in bodies of surface water throughout the world. It's caused a number of waterborne disease outbreaks since 1984, when the first outbreak was reported in the United States. The most serious outbreak from Cryptosporidium occurred in 1993 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, resulting in at least 50 Cryptosporidium-related deaths and over 400,000 illnesses. In 1996, partly as a result of the Milwaukee incident, Congress directed the EPA to promulgate something called a National Primary Drinking Water Regulation for any contaminant that the EPA, and I'm going to read a long quote, quote, determines may have an adverse effect on the health of persons, is known to occur or has a substantial likelihood of occurring in public water systems with a frequency and at levels of public health concern, and for which, in the sole judgment of the EPA administrator, regulation of such contaminant presents a meaningful opportunity for health risk reduction for persons served by public water systems, close quote. The EPA determined that crypto is such a contaminant and published a proposed rule in August of 2003. In January of 2005, when Commissioner Saltzman was still the commissioner and prior to my coming on board and Commissioner Leonard becoming the water commissioner, the Portland City Council committed to pursue alternative forms of compliance for LT2. Soon after, the city met with EPA officials to encourage the agency to alter the final rule so that it would include alternate approaches that would allow Portland to avoid building additional treatment or covering its reservoirs. When first assigned the Water Bureau, Commissioner Leonard contacted community stakeholders in July 2005, that was our first month on board, and learned of their desire that the city fight the proposed LT2 rule. He and I met with them, and we pledged to do everything in our power to maintain Mount Tabor's open reservoirs in accordance with the Mount Tabor Independent Review Panel recommendation to City Council that the city develop a risk mitigation plan to come into compliance with the proposed rule. In January of 2006, the final rule was published. Much to our surprise and to our chagrin, it removed risk mitigation as an option for compliance with the open reservoir requirements. Portland had been planning on pursuing risk mitigation as our alternative or as our way of complying with the rule. As a result, the city filed a legal challenge in the Washington, D.C. District Court of Appeals in early 2006. Community stakeholders were intimately involved in the challenge. They participated in the selection of the nationally recognized law firm selected to pursue the city's legal challenge. The firm, Boley Hoag, is the only firm in the United States who's ever successfully challenged a Safe Drinking Water Act rule promulgated by the EPA. The stakeholders met with Bureau staff, and they participated in regular meetings in every aspect of our challenge, including compiling documents to support the city's case and reviewing and commenting on the legal briefs filed by the city's Boston attorneys. Also in 2007, we worked closely with the Office of Government Relations and representatives from Oregon Wild and Friends of the Reservoirs to pass state legislation that would enable us or ensure that we had the same opportunities as the city to seek alternative compliance with the LT2 rule at the state level. that are currently available at the federal level. Legislation was crafted by Bureau and stakeholder representatives, and it was introduced by Representative Jackie Dingfelder and passed with broad support. In November of that year, 2007, a unanimous Court of Appeals said, quote, "Because we find the city's arguments either meritless, irrelevant, or both, we deny the petition for review." Following that loss, Commissioner Leonard and I met with stakeholders Floyd Jones, Regna Merritt, Scott Fernandez, and Frank Gearhart. And Commissioner Leonard expressed his belief that the city would now need to comply with the LT2 rule as written, including building a treatment plant for the Bull Run source and ending our use of the open in-town reservoirs. The stakeholders urged Commissioner Leonard to pursue a variance to the rule and seek federal legislative intervention by our congressional delegation. He instructed us to pursue the variance option and pledged to convene meetings with the Portland's delegation and the stakeholders to explore possible legislative options. This was done, however, with the understanding that the Water Bureau would begin planning for conventional compliance with LT2 as written, so that the city would not find itself in violation of federal drinking water law should its efforts at obtaining a variance or legislative relief fail. In December of 2007, Commissioner Leonard convened a meeting, including representatives from Senator Wyden, Congressman Blumenauer, and Congressman Wu's offices, the City Government Relations Office, the Water Bureau, Floyd Jones, Jeff Boley, Cascade Anderson Geller, Scott Fernandez, and others. The congressional staffers present indicated at this meeting that such legislation would be, quote, a heavy lift, but that they said they would work with the city on strategies as opportunities arose within Congress. They indicated that the city should go through the variance process in advance of seeking legislative solutions because it would be better to exhaust all administrative remedies before seeking a legislative end around. In early 2008, the Water Bureau worked directly with County Health Officer Gary Oxman, Multnomah County Epidemiologist Amy Sullivan, Floyd Jones, Scott Fernandez, Jeff Boley, Cascade Anderson Geller, and others on developing a proposal to the EPA for how the city would approach gathering evidence to support a variance. We invited the EPA to Portland to present our proposed variance approach. And although they praised our thoughtful and innovative approach, they ultimately rejected the city's proposed approach for obtaining a variance and indicated to us what specific water quality monitoring would be required in order to qualify for a variance to the treatment requirement for the LT2 rule. We've since been working directly with the EPA since then to work out the details of water testing procedures. We've budgeted close to $500,000 to conduct a year's worth of testing to make sure to make Portland's case. At this time, when we met with the EPA, they also indicated that they would not consider a variance application for the open reservoir requirements of the rule. Water Bureau staff confirmed the EPA's assertion that a variance on the open reservoir provision of the rule was not feasible with both the city attorney's office as well as our attorneys Foley Hoag, who'd litigated the 2007 challenge. Late last night, Floyd Jones sent you a note informing you that she felt there was a significant error in the report. She indicated that the Boston firm outlined in their March 2008 reservoir variance memo to us that a variance is allowed by the Safe Drinking Water Act. Foley Hoag specifically outlined a strategy for pursuing a reservoir variance in the final paragraph of their memo. She requested that for the purposes of the Water Bureau LT2 report to you today, the report should state that a reservoir variance is possible as outlined by Foley Hoag, but that informally EPA has denied such. Early on in our legal challenge, the EPA informed our attorneys that an alternative treatment approach that constituted risk mitigation is not sufficient. Ultimately, they ended up saying that as well with our treatment variance approach. Foley Hoag was clear that EPA has broad authority under the Safe Drinking Water Act to determine whether or not a variance is applicable, and that a court would defer to the agency if we were to sue. We can certainly apply for an open reservoir variance. However, EPA has indicated that variances are not applicable to open reservoirs. Essentially, yes, we can ask, but EPA has already indicated it will say no. Hence the Water Bureau's position that an open reservoir variance is not possible or feasible. Our efforts to secure alternatives would be better spent on legislative options rather than wasting our time on administrative process that the EPA has indicated in person and in writing that it will not consider. It's important to note that EPA has discretion on this. It may, quote, may grant a variance. So it also has the substantial discretion to not grant a variance, no matter what the evidence may show. The key distinction here between our effort at a treatment variance and our stakeholders' desire for an open reservoir variance is our potential ability to prove equivalent water quality for our source water, which is not possible for us to do for the open reservoirs. We cannot achieve the 4, 3, and 2 log inactivation required at the open reservoirs without implementing one of the prescribed treatments in the rule. Floy and other stakeholders are aware of that fact. One of our complaints about the final rule is that the EPA included language that, in effect, considers the water in our open reservoirs as raw water. Unless we build a treatment plant at each of the outlets for each reservoir, we cannot meet the requirement of the rule as it relates to crypto, giardia, or viruses. That's not the case for our source water. That's why we believe that there really isn't a viable option in getting a variance on the open reservoirs. In August of 2008, the Water Bureau briefed Senator Wyden's office staff, on the city's efforts to date in securing a variance for the treatment requirement, and in EPA's communication regarding the lack of a variance option for open reservoirs and the city's continued interest in a legislative fix for its open reservoirs. In November of 2008, Commissioner Leonard met with stakeholders Floyd Jones, Regna Merritt, Scott Fernandez, and others to come to a common strategy regarding notification to the new Obama administration of the city's interest in seeking legislative alternatives to LT2. Commissioner Leonard's office, the Water Bureau, and other stakeholders collaborated on a letter to the Obama transition team, indicating the city's strong interest in seeking alternatives to the rule. The city has yet to hear back from the administration regarding this latest request. This month, actually it's last month now, Commissioner Leonard sent a letter to each member of Portland's congressional delegation to ask for its help in introducing and passing federal legislation to allow the city to continue to use its 5 open drinking water reservoirs for drinking water storage, and to allow the city to continue to use its Bull Run source water without an additional treatment facility. So what are our compliance strategies? In response to the court ruling, Commissioner Leonard directed the Water Bureau to pursue the following 3 compliance strategies. 1, attempt to obtain a variance to the treatment portion of the rule from the EPA. A variance could conceivably allow the Bureau to avoid the expense associated with building new treatment if the city can demonstrate to the EPA that due to the nature of the raw water Bull Run source, additional treatment is unnecessary. 2, request that Portland's congressional delegation introduce and pass federal legislation allowing Portland to continue to use its Bull Run source water without additional treatment and continues using its 5 open finished drinking water reservoirs for storage. 3, plan and budget to achieve compliance with the LT2 rule as written. This includes the development of a filtration plant to comply with the water treatment requirement of the rule and a plan for developing replacement closed water storage facilities for the open reservoirs at Mount Tabor and Washington Park. Recent actions that we've taken under these 3 compliance strategies: obtain a variance. City staff, stakeholders, including Oregon Wild and Friends of the Reservoirs, met with the EPA staff in late February of 2008 to discuss the variance process. EPA clarified for us what is necessary for the city to demonstrate in order to qualify for a variance. Through additional water quality monitoring, we'll need to show that our untreated water source is as free of cryptosporidium as the drinking water of other systems that treat for the parasites. So in other words, our raw water has to be as good as the water coming out of the tap for purposes of crypto in Salem, Eugene, Seattle, Tacoma, Chicago, New York, everywhere in the country. Our raw water source has to be that free of crypto. The Bureau has formulated a sampling plan and schedule that provides the most technical and economically feasible path in obtaining data to demonstrate that the cryptosporidium levels in our source water are below the 0.00075 OOCs per liter, and is in the process of validating a 12-month monitoring program with the EPA in anticipation of applying for a variance from the treatment requirement in mid-2010. We've selected a nationally renowned lab to assist in setting up the validation process for the variant sampling, and we're submitting our proposed sampling methodology to the EPA for review. We expect to begin large sample testing in April of 2009, and we'll collect large volume samples for the next 12 months. Currently, we collect 50 liters a month, and we are talking about 200 and 250-liter samples 3 and 4 times a week. Our goal is to collect just over 54,000 liters of water over the next 12 months. To our knowledge, this will be the first ever attempt to obtain a variance under the Safe Drinking Water Act that attempts to prove a source water is so good that additional treatment is not necessary. We're plowing new ground here with our proposal, and we face a number of difficult and technical challenges. But we're up to the task, and we expect to start that sampling, that large volume sampling, next month. On the second compliance strategy, seeking legislative relief, as part of our 2009 federal legislative agenda, you all approved identified a desire for congressional intervention to continue to use our Bull Run source without additional treatment and continue to use the 5 open drinking water reservoirs for storage. In addition, the Water Bureau and the Office of Government Relations staff have begun working with interested stakeholders, including Friends of the Reservoir and Oregon Wild, to develop the legislative language that we would present to Portland's congressional delegation with the goal of allowing the city to continue using its drinking water reservoirs and the Bull Run source without additional treatment. A public meeting to discuss the proposed legislation with members of the delegation and or their staff is scheduled next month on April 11th. Finally, the third piece, plan and budget for compliance with the rule as written. Bureau staff has spent the last several months developing a proposed compliance schedule for the treatment rule as well as the open reservoir portion of the rule. On treatment, we're working on a plan, design, and building a filtration plant to comply with the surface water treatment rule by April 1, 2014. The total estimated cost to build a filtration plant is $385 million. Initial funding for this project is currently in our proposed 2009-10 budget, and additional funds will be requested in future fiscal budget years until the recommended project is complete. Engineering and planning staff recently completed a benefits versus cost comparison of UV versus filtration, and that's been provided to you just in the last couple of hours. Yes, you should have it. The results were similar to the conclusions of the work of the Bull Run Treatment Panel that filtration was the preferred alternative to UV because of the additional benefits that would accrue with filtration. The Water Bureau's deviated from the panel's recommendation on filtration in two important respects. We propose to build the new plant near our Lusted Hill facility rather than at Powell Butte. The panel recommended building the plant at Powell Butte, but recommended that the Lusted Hill site remain under active consideration as an alternate to Powell Butte, should neighborhood, environmental, or other issues render the Powell Butte site an inappropriate location for that treatment facility. And we have concluded that opposition to building a treatment plant at Powell Butte is such that building at the Lusted Hill site makes a lot more sense for us. We are also proposing a conventional filtration plant as opposed to membrane filtration. The panel recommended membrane filtration, but recommended that direct filtration remain under consideration as a backup treatment technology. It found that conventional filtration has a long track record of effective treatment of municipal water supplies, with many installations of the SNIs needed by Portland. It is the state of the art these days in most cities. In our recent research, the Bureau determined that membrane filtration, while still a promising technology, is still pretty darn new. We are aware of only 3 large membrane filtration plants in existence in the United States today. 2 of them are 100 million gallon facilities in San Diego and Ontario, California. And there's also a 70 MGD plant in Minneapolis. Our requirement would be for a 200 MGD plant, so twice the size of that in San Diego and Ontario. The Bureau believes that a conventional plant would best serve its needs and that we don't want to be the beta site for the largest treatment plant in the United States. On open reservoirs, we've developed a proposed schedule that brings Portland into compliance with the LT2 open reservoir provision by 2020. That's 12 years from now. The schedule provides the city the flexibility to minimize rate impacts and balance resources. Being mindful of our need to balance the Bureau's ability to complete a challenging capital improvement program over the next several years, as well as reserve some capacity to perform work not currently contemplated that may become a priority. An example of that that just hit our plate is the Eastside Streetcar. In 2004, the Bureau proposed a 10-year compliance plan, but rejected that approach this time around in favor of the 12 years we've suggested in our proposal for the reasons that I've stated above. However, you should note that EPA has communicated to us in person and in writing that it will not approve a compliance schedule that does not require Portland taking immediate steps to comply with the open reservoir components of LT2. So how are we going to do that? Powell Butte 2 is the logical first step along the compliance path, but it can exist as a standalone project. Construction of Powell Butte 2 was identified in the System Vulnerability Study in 1996 as a critical project. The existing reservoir needs to be seismically upgraded, but the work can't be done until the second reservoir is operational. This project would give the Water Bureau flexibility in how we comply with the open reservoir portion of the LT2 rule, and it also gives us leeway and time to work and get our congressional exemption for the open reservoirs. If we are successful in that, the Powell Butte project would still be done so that reservoir can be taken offline while the seismic retrofitting is done, and it will still serve the needs of Portlanders. This is a facility that's going to last us 50 to 100 years, long after we and our children and our grandchildren are gone. We don't need the storage next year. We don't need the storage in 3 years. But we will eventually need that storage if we are successful in getting legislative relief under the open reservoirs. If we are not successful in getting the legislative relief, then Powell Butte becomes a critical piece of our compliance strategy. Water Bureau staff met with the EPA in Seattle on January 14, 2009. We outlined a proposed schedule that was achievable and that did not attempt to fast-track compliance to the detriment of the Bureau's ability to get work done or that increased rates at an acceptable rate over a short period of time. At the same time, the proposed schedule meets the EPA's requirement that Portland begin taking immediate action to comply with the rule. In its February 11, 2009 response to the city, the EPA indicated that the proposed schedule appeared reasonable to them, but said that all projects that require state review and approval of plans and specifications must identify specific due dates in order to allow the primacy agency, either the EPA or the state of Oregon, to track the city's progress and allow the state to manage its review workload. In addition, the EPA indicated that in order for the schedule to be enforceable, construction begin and end dates must be broken out as separate items and assigned specific dates. And just as an aside, when we went to the EPA in January 14th, we met with Marie Jennings, the director of the drinking water program for Region 10, and four other people. All four of them were either lawyers or enforcement staff. They came with the expectation that the city of Portland was going to propose something unreasonable, and they were ready to slap us down at that meeting. They've made it very clear, however, that our proposal has got to have dates in it so that they can enforce the schedule that we've proposed. Water Bureau staff have revised our proposed compliance schedule in response to their direction. The proposed schedule means that the City of Portland will be in compliance with the open reservoir portion of the rule by December 31st, 2020, barring any legislative relief that we obtain from the rule from the Congress. The total estimated cost for storage, transmission, and system improvements needed to disconnect the open reservoirs is estimated $403.4 million. And that includes $236 million already identified in our upcoming five-year CIP. Initial funding for this project is currently in our 2008-09 budget. That's for the staff time that we've put on the project so far this year. And additional funds will be requested in the fiscal 9-10 budget and future fiscal budgets until the recommended projects are complete. The Water Bureau recommends that it continue to comply with the new rule by pursuing the strategies I've outlined before. Seek a variance, request legislative relief, and engage in the necessary planning, design, construction, and budgeting to comply with the rule as written. I recommend that the council accept the report and adopt its recommendations, and I am available to answer questions. I'll be available to answer questions afterwards, and I have a number of my staff here in the event that you ask me something that I'm not able to respond to.
Thank you, David.
David, if it's the will of the council to, that was informative and lengthy, so if it's the will of the council to go directly to testimony and have questions and conversation at the end. Great. Carla.
We have 13 people signed up. First three, please come on up, are Randall Smith, Catherine Knotson, and Gilly Burlingham. And they'll be followed by Regna Merritt, Dee White, and Scott Fernandez.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Randy Smith from Southeast Portland. And I was debating whether to, what hat should I wear as I come today. And I decided that one of my hats is I'm the current president of the Pacific Northwest Microscopy Society. And we have a convention coming to Portland in 2010, a national convention that I guess will bring several million dollars in, you know, fairly large convention. And it occurred to me that our water system is just as important. There's no reason why we couldn't attract major conventions to show what a good variance we have obtained, should we obtain the variance. The Microscopy Society is interested in instrumentation of all kinds, and in the past I've talked to David Schaff and the Friends of the Reservoirs and testimony here about using flow cytometry and other methods, analytical methods, to assist in the open clean water reservoirs as they pretty much exist today. And I did this in part because other countries don't use the system we have. Australia, in particular, uses flow cytometry as they have an active cryptosporidium problem. I've kind of wandered here a bit. Now, previously, I gave both a report and testimony about the applicability of instrumental methods in parasitology and in treatment. And we currently have no known cryptosporidium problem, and yet EPA bases their regulation on this single organism. And just from the scientific viewpoint, I don't think that's the correct way to go, but they are EPA, and as David just testified, they do have the clean water program to enforce. Giardia is also a very active organism in throughout the Northwest. And both of these organisms don't require human or bovine exposure. I mean, just our watershed doesn't have human waste or cattle movement. So it's relatively safe, and I think pursuing a variance and a legislative alternate is probably the best way to go. I'm not being critical of the current program. It's a very complicated issue. I'm kind of critical of the poor scientific effort of the agencies. They have addressed, you know, several experts, but in terms of modern parasitology, it's mostly classical parasitology, and am I running out of time?
You have 27 seconds.
Okay. It's adequate, but not great. Currently, there are instrumental methods that far exceed what is being offered. And I hope that, and as you read the rest of the testimony, which I will not get to, that you will consider a closer relation with Portland State University, a means of helping develop both the variance and the legislative alternative with a greater use of research at our university system. So there you go.
Thank you.
And
Mr.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just had one question. Yes. You refer to Jardia.
Yeah, and I am actually one of those unfortunate souls who actually once contracted Jardia.
Yeah.
I got it in Salt Lake City. And I won't describe for the public the symptoms. Let's just say I stayed close to my to the hotel for the week I was there. But I'm just saying, when you say both of these organisms do not require human or bovine exposure within our watershed, could you just very briefly explain what you mean by that?
Well, that there's been some emphasis on possible contamination of the system by cattle or human contaminant. But almost any mammal throughout the forest is capable of transmitting Cryptosporidium and Giardia. So even though it's hot and thirsty day, almost any stream you test around the Northwest through the glass of water that you're about to drink, Giardia is very likely to be there.
I see.
Now, our system, the treatment methods we have, seem to be perfectly adequate because we don't have an ongoing problem for these organisms. And just like the old adage say, it's not necessary to repair a problem that isn't there. But again, I kind of go back to support for a variance and a legislative assistance. And I think a program at Portland State would be welcome to contribute to David Schaff's program to get the variance, utilize more students, and perhaps develop an instrumental analysis system that would support the water program and maybe be a model for the nation.
Thank you.
And EPA may be receptive to developing a new model system.
Sorry, I got
to
push this
on
here.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Knotson. I live in the South Tabor neighborhood. I've been following this issue for the better part of the last almost 7 years now. As far as the open reservoirs are concerned, the City Council was told in November 1969 to bury its open reservoirs due to bird fecal contamination. A resolution was adopted in December of 1972 to bury the open reservoirs by 1984. This resolution was rescinded in December 1976. The open reservoirs at that time were drained and cleaned only once per year until a PSU study suggested in the mid-1970s that the Water Bureau drain and clean them twice per year, which is now the current practice. Construction of new open reservoirs was outlawed under the Interim Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule in December 16, 1998. None could be built after February 16, 1999. For this reason, the City Council cannot obtain a variance or a waiver from the US EPA to keep the open reservoirs as is. The Water Bureau said during the February through May 2004 independent review panel process that they would need to build a treatment plant in the Mount Tabor Park Central Facilities Yard in order to treat the open reservoirs at the outlets. This would require very expensive pumping and a 24-hour industrial operation in a residential neighborhood and would not fit in Mount Tabor Park. There's no room to treat the open reservoirs at Mount Tabor Park or Washington Park at the outlets otherwise. There's a 30-acre land site abutting Washington Park reservoirs on their west side. They were abandoned from 1894 to 1904 because the landslide went over the parapet walls into the basins. And your archives has photos of these. The reservoirs had to be rebuilt. And all the open reservoirs leak, according to a report from the Water Bureau to the drinking water program. And they are not seismically stable. I still support the Open Reservoir Replacement Project of 2002. It was a better plan than the proposal to place underground storage tanks on Powell Butte Nature Park and on Kelly Butte. The placement of the underground tanks is merely to avoid the future conflicts with those who don't want to pay for burial of the open reservoirs or treatment of Bull Run water. Millions of dollars have been wasted since May 29, 2002 to cater to the demands of people who oppose burying the open reservoirs and treating Bull Run water for cryptosporidium. The only reason for their opposition is that they don't want to pay for either project. Further delays to prevent the Water Bureau from complying with LT2 Enhanced Surface Water Treatment Rule will be detrimental to our 19 wholesale water customers who have not been consulted at all during the last 6+ years. They will help pay for our projects as part of their contracts with the Water Bureau. Portland is the only city in the United States of America seeking to avoid complying with LT2. I oppose any efforts to continue stalling to comply to the LT2, as well as seeking legislative or federal changes to the Safe Drinking Water Act of 1974. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Hi, Gilly Burlingham. I'm speaking for myself. And after listening to the kids, I decided I'd better make you all laugh because it's hard to compete with kids. I think what happened with the EPA is they heard the word Milwaukee and they panicked, only they didn't understand it was the wrong Milwaukee with an I and it's spelt wrong. Yes, what happened in Milwaukee was disastrous. I'm speaking of Wisconsin, where 430,000 people got sick and some people died. Now, I don't have any written testimony. I'm just getting up to speed. My sister is a sanitary engineer for 50 years with Greeley and Hanson, which is one of the top two firms in Chicago. I've been on the hotline with her, and she said, yes, Giardia is the more dangerous. Cryptosporidium, no, she knows that they shouldn't be there. What happened in Milwaukee was that was the most unusual event, a huge winter storm, and the cattle, as you probably know, dairy is the biggest industry in Wisconsin. And the cattle running around obviously got into the water. This came down, and they had a rather poor water treatment plant there. So, yeah, joking aside, I feel very strongly that what is being proposed here is absolutely unnecessary, and I hope that you'll go for a variance. I would like to say, by the way, that when I typed in the city that it works, what comes out but my hometown of Chicago? And I fully agree with what Randy is suggesting. When I saw your guys down around the McCall restaurant, and it still hadn't been changed. But since we've had that slogan for a long time, I think that you're putting down from forest to faucet is an excellent idea. My sister thinks actually you could save a heck of a lot of money if you just put filters on each faucet coming out of the taps, and she said that would be cheaper. Now, the good news I bring to you is I'm glad to get in. I want to go up to Seattle. I'm going up to Seattle, and I want to talk to the EPA if that's where I have to talk to them. But just yesterday, an EPA administrator said she stopped the permits being given for the open, the blowing of the mountaintops off in Virginia, and she stopped that. I think we maybe could convince the EPA, because we have a new deal here. The old regime is gone. And under Obama, they say it's going to be science, not politics. Politics is another word for big money and big multinational firms. And by the way, my sister graduated, the first woman from the Northwestern Technological Institute, and her classmate was named Harza. He was the younger Harza. It's a Chicago firm. A lot of Chicago connections, and we have interesting water there, including the Deep Tunnel Project, which my sister said her firm didn't think was too bright an idea. But it
worked.
Thank
you very much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
The next three.
Regna Merritt, D. White, and Scott Fernandez.
Good afternoon.
And they'll be followed by Dan Bourbonas, Jane Malarkey, and Brad Yazzolino.
Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you. My name is Regna Merritt. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Wild and of Oregon Natural Resources Council Action, or ONRC Action. Together we have over 10,000 members and volunteers, activists, and most of them drink Bull Run water. We've worked for over 20 years to protect the Bull Run, often encouraging the Water Bureau and the City Council to seek legislation to protect the Bull Run, and then working in partnership with the Council to secure that legislative agenda. Protecting the legacy of Bull Run and the public health of Portland residents is a shared responsibility that we take very seriously. This has been a difficult journey, and though we're not all on the same page at the same time, I do believe that we're all working in good faith to protect and preserve our water system and our pure water and the system that delivers it. I have strong faith that in the end, our combined efforts will serve future generations well. We certainly appreciate the work of Commissioner Leonard and Council, your support for the city's legal challenge to the LT2 regs. We and Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility joined as amicus partners in that legal challenge, and your efforts to achieve alternative methods of compliance, including the one that we consider to be the best method, legislative relief. We do not support the proposal to build a filtration plant and take our reservoirs offline. This is a tremendously costly fix to a problem that exists elsewhere, but not in Portland. With regard to filtration, constructed to filter out infectious crypto, a filtration system won't do that. It won't do that here. Why? Because we have little to no cryptosporidium in our protected watershed. We have no evidence of cryptosporidium specifically infectious to humans, and no evidence of any cryptosporidium infections originating in our drinking water system, which was put in place over 100 years ago. We have such pure water because of the historic protections against human entry and associated human and bovine waste. The general prohibition on entry into the Bull Run Management Unit by humans and domestic animals ensures that the cryptosporidium will not pose a public health threat. Consistent water purity is a direct result of the watershed's isolation from human entry and development and the exclusion of livestock. That's what makes our watershed unique. Oregon Wild and others toiled for years to protect the Bull Run from logging and development that would force costly treatment. We achieved the highest standard of legislative protection in 1996 and 2001. We are now faced with a bitter irony. Construction of a filtration system will create new demand to open the watershed to logging, development, and human entry. The argument? Why should logging and development interests be hampered by site-specific Bull Run safeguards if Portland's water is filtered, like that of most other large municipalities in the world, whose watersheds are open to logging, development, cows, and sporidium, cryptosporidium? I'm short on time here. I'm kind of cut to the quick. The cost of building a plant is mind-boggling, particularly during these terrible economic times. The city has critical needs that must be met, including public health and safety needs, and this is not one of them. These are the reasons why we are focusing our energy on securing a legislative remedy from LT2. And for these reasons, we respectfully ask that you not sign the report unless it's modified to, number one, request an extension in compliance deadlines from the EPA, the DC EPA, and the Obama administration. The EPA does grant extensions for dirty water systems to comply all the time. Two, request that the Oregon congressional delegation support the city in its request for such an extension. Three, do not spend any city money on construction of LT2-only projects. And four, implement and maintain an aggressive effort to secure legislative relief. And don't give up. Legislation never comes easy. It took years for Oregon Wild and the Portland City Council to pass Bull Run legislation. Oregon Wild worked with the congressional delegation to protect the Lewis and Clark Mountain Wilderness for 10 years, and that legislation passed Congress today.
You're a minute and a half over.
Sorry. Surely, your efforts to protect our Bull Run and the system that serves it up are just as deserving of our passion and persistence. Thank you, and my apologies for going over.
That's all right. Hi. Who's next?
Am I next?
Yeah.
Hi. I would just start off by saying I'd like for y'all to vote no today and continue to aggressively pursue legislative relief. And I'm turned in a letter that we wrote, the Friends of Reservoirs wrote to our congressional delegation. It's with the testimony today, and I'm just going to read from part of that letter. The LT2 rule was meant to protect citizens across the country from waterborne disease, as represented by a 1993 cryptosporidium outbreak in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where a filtered water system failed, leading to grave illness and death. The LT2 rule, as it relates to Portland's unique water system and open reservoirs, reservoirs represents one of the major failures of the Bush administration, the failure to rely on sound science as a foundation for policy. The EPA has never documented a single public health incident related to open reservoirs. The EPA has never conducted any scientific research that compares open reservoirs to closed reservoirs. And while the general level of contamination in covered reservoirs has never been studied, the EPA documented multiple outbreaks of salmonella and other diarrheal illnesses due to drinking water from covered reservoirs. The most recent such outbreak was March-April of 2008 in Alamosa County, Colorado, where salmonella contamination of a covered reservoir sickened at least 60 and caused a death. The level of cryptosporidium contamination in Portland's in-town reservoirs was studied in the 90s and found to be zero. Current studies demonstrate zero contamination by cryptosporidium. There has never been an outbreak of cryptosporidium illness in Portland attributed to drinking water. If forced to comply with this EPA mandate, the city would be harmed by the loss of the many benefits of open reservoirs, including the loss of sunlight on water, which could create the potential for public health problems from nitrification. The loss of open reservoir venting of disinfection byproduct gases, the expense, which is the major thing, as well as construction in one or more nature parks, and loss of the opportunity to maintain a well-functioning green system of water storage. Many community stakeholders have concerns regarding corporate involvement in the LT2 rulemaking process. Montgomery Watts and Harza Global was deeply involved in the rule development. MWH builds treatment plants, underground reservoir tanks, dams, and other projects worldwide. It is possible that the power of these special interests may have determined the final outcome, a rule that would increase their profits at the expense of Portland and other municipalities with safe drinking water. With the near absence of LT2 research related to water quality in open finished reservoirs and in the complete absence of research comparing water quality in open reservoirs to that in closed reservoirs, it is simply bad policy to require drastic changes where no problem has been shown to exist.
So, you did good.
I'm sweating to prove
The part of your testimony where you said something may have influenced the recommendation for a profit motive. What were you referring to? Or did I misunderstand?
The recommendation for the rules, you mean?
Oh, on the national level.
On the national
Got
level.
It. Got it.
Right.
I understand.
We know that they helped write the rule.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Good job, sir.
Scott Fernandez. Science has caught up. We now know the advancements of science provide a greater awareness of the relationship between cryptosporidium and drinking water public health. One example is that catastrophic sewage events are the link to cryptosporidium drinking water public health issues where hundreds of pathogenic organisms are present, not just cryptosporidium. Bull Run does not have sewage exposure and no measurable public health risk. Secondly, pharmaceutical treatment now is available for cryptosporidiosis that wasn't available in years past. On the other hand, the information used by EPA for LT2 is outdated, incorrect, and not scientifically supported. One example is the EPA said hundreds of people would die each year caused by cryptosporidium in drinking water. No one, including infants, elderly, or immunocompromised, has died from cryptosporidium in municipally treated drinking water since 1994. This translates to a higher risk of dying from bubonic plague than from cryptosporidium in drinking water. In the end, it will be the children of the community that suffer the most. From the covered reservoirs, their increased respiration rates of 2 to 4 times that of adults make them more susceptible when they are in schools or at home, susceptible to the carcinogenic and toxic gases that would normally be vented by the open reservoirs. They would also suffer from carrying the burden of $1.6 billion in increased public debt from LT2, taking away resources from needed future community projects. And they would also suffer from the unnecessary Bull Run system reconfiguration that will provide no measurable public health benefit, ultimately degrading our water. The action needed by the Portland City Council, number one, stop the Powell Butte 2 reservoir and Kelly Butte reservoir building process. Number two, stop wasteful spending on unnecessary EPA variance process. Number three, keep and maintain the Mount Tabor and Washington Park open reservoirs as drinking water structures. No public health problems have been linked to the open reservoirs. Fecal coliforms are bacteria that indicate contamination. In recent years, in thousands of water samples, zero fecal coliforms have been found in our drinking water distribution system. The disinfection barriers are working as designed. Number four, stop enhanced disinfection filtration plant. The coagulants used in the filtration process end up in our drinking water. Aluminum, iron, and synthetic chemical coagulants can present public health problems. And number five, please tell the congressional delegation, move forward now with a plan to seek complete legislative relief from the LT2 regulation. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, before you call the roll, I just want to make sure that, I mean, it's your 3 minutes, and as long as you speak to the general issue, you can obviously say whatever you want. But the recommendations are sort of three simultaneous actions, and to the extent that you can